is the research project share based payments, and I give the floor to Nadia.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nadia, and I'm going to talk to you about our research project on IFRS 2. So basically, my first objective today is to inform you about this project. So this project was added to the research program after the 2011 agenda consultation. Last agenda consultation. Many people who responded to the last agenda consultation about this standard said that this was a complex standard. So I guess it's not new. But people had mixed views about about the future of the standard. What to do about the future of IFRS 2? I should or should not it be added to the active agenda for the board to consider? So now in 2015, we are approaching the next agenda consultation, and the purpose of this research project is to prepare a research paper which basically summarizes all different views that exist out there about IFRS 2, so that the people who respond to the next agenda consultation have a more like, you know, some sort of basis to form more balanced views about the future of IFRS 2. Because I think what happened in the previous agenda consultations, many people approached this topic of IFRS 2 from their personal kind of experience point of view. And some people had problems with IFRS 2, some people managed to overcome some of these problems, some companies are bigger, some companies are smaller. So I think there was a range of different experiences, and what we're aiming to do now is to consolidate all these views and experiences, and as I said, to hopefully come up with some sort of like, you know, more balanced view about the standard during 2015 agenda consultation. So this is the first point, basically. The project has just commenced and it's out there. The second objective of our today's discussion is to ask you about your experience with IFRS 2 and basically just to help me to identify the application issues that preparers encounter when they apply IFRS 2 in practice. So, and that's what I'm asking you to do today, during today's meeting. In the paper that was provided to you in advance of this meeting, I have started to compile the list of application issues, just in order so to facilitate our discussion, to give you some, you know, points or some starting points to consider. And I guess at this stage, I don't have much else to say. And I'm just asking you, what has been your experience with IFRS 2? Do you find it complex standard, and what have been the application issues that you encountered in practice?
Europe, our company is having the stock option programs for employees as well as part of employees, and we have two types of programs. One is equity settlement based program as well as a cash settlement based program, mainly for the Japanese domestic person. The equity settlement based program is applied, and all the other cash settlement based program applied, and for the benefit of the employees. I like to point two things. One is the inconsistent or different evaluation or not exercised options, remaining options. For equity settlement base, we do not have to evaluate for every program, but for cash settlement based program, we need to evaluate based on the fair value at the end of the closing day. And sometimes, just due to the final situation at the end of the period in the market, sometimes it brings fluctuation of volatility through income statement for the cash settlement based program. So as a fundamental question, why there should be different evaluation necessary to be applied? That one thing. And the other thing is that the calculation itself is very, very complicated regarding the fair value. And sometimes it is difficult to provide reasonable explanation why such fair value change happens. For example, even though the such program is for maximize the company's enterprise value through the such compensation. But in short, at the end of the day, if market price of our company increase, that will bring the increase of fair value of exercise option, and that will go to income statement negatively. So the purpose and the result seems contradictory from a previous point of view. So anyway, maybe, due to such a complication of fair value calculation, it sometimes brings confusion from the view of management using such a complicated program. That is the second point.
Use the current value measurement for the cash settled arrangements brings volatility to the financial statements because, of course, share price is quoted. Do you think it's a reasonable outcome of what's happening, like in the financial statements of the company?
As you know, the such. Fair value or market price is almost out of control of the company. It fluctuates for many, many various reasons which are not related to our company's performance, but the final date situation in the market may sometimes hit our performance results. Sometimes positively, but sometimes negatively. So anyway, sometimes it is very big impact in our operating profit, which is out of control of our management.
Maybe there is also an item which we discuss on the performance reporting regarding what is kind of core operating results and what is maybe also a result but not really so heavily influenced by management, influenced more by market other drivers.
But it is a transfer of wealth.
Yeah, but
from
it's
shareholders. I hate to say it, but
especially in cash plans, cash is going out of the company, and if that is based on the fair value, I think that has to be reflected. Frank.
What do you say about a standard that has so much complexity? You know, the complexity triples when you start dealing with employees moving around the world, legal entity accounting, tax effects and jurisdictions. There's lots of knock-on complications because of it. If I sat back and thought about what is IFRS 2 achieved, I'm going to be bold and say that I think spreading for vesting conditions is garbage. I'll say that commercially, when companies award share-based payments, which we have a lot of, we view it as a bonus for the year, and it's in respect of past services for that year. So the fact that there's vesting conditions and the accountants say that it's related to future services, that's not the way it's commercially viewed at all.
Really?
Yep. I would look at cash settled liabilities, and I'd say that's a financial instrument. Why are you dealing with it here? You're just doubling up on the issue. You know, there are a lot of things that I think we can do in accounting when we start embarking on these projects that unfortunately now with this one, we've just created a myriad of issues and constant interpretive issues that have sort of lost sight of what the real game here was. So I think you've only touched on the issues. The issues get triple, like I said, with tax jurisdictions and legal entities and people moving around. So if you want more interpretive issues to come forward, I can bring you a whole host more. But we deal with it. We get on. We have systems in place. We have teams of people that do this accounting because of the complications, the number of people who have the awards. We have the tranching effect as well, because 30% over 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, so you divide the award up into three awards. You've just created a minefield for accounting that ultimately, from a business perspective, like I said, we view it as an award for the year. That's the compensation. There you go. Where you get analysts excited is on the individual KMP remuneration disclosures. Now, under IFRS, it's only on the aggregate. But in Australia, we have individual KMP disclosures that fall off the back of the IFRS 2 measurement. So the moment that any of these awards don't vest because of an ED or otherwise it left, and then you get the reversal effect of reversing their share payment charges in prior years, and all of a sudden the current year remuneration looks so skewed because of the reversal coming through, now we have to explain why the effect is so dramatic. I had a director in a meeting this week ask me, why don't we revalue our own equity now that our stock price is going up for the past awards? And I said, well, fundamentally, it's equity issued. You never revalue your own equity. But you sit back and you think, well, we've granted it for accounting, but we haven't recognized the second two tranches yet. So why don't we recognize the second two tranches at the value of the date when they get recognized for accounting? But we don't do that. So I think conceptually there's some issues there that don't quite fit, but it is very complex, and I think this is a chance maybe to sit back in the consultation and think more strategically about the standard.
Yeah. Can I ask a question on that? So the last phrase you just used is what I was honing in on in my mind, and again, harkening back to Bob and Malcolm's observations earlier. I think you also mentioned it about thinking strategically. In my mind, there's no reason why the accounting in this area shouldn't also be contemplated as we contemplate issues about debt and equity. Why have multiple models? You know, what's special about it? But again, it comes back to may not like the outcome in some cases. And I'd like to see more consistency in the treatment between IAS 32 and IFRS 2, and more consistency in what's considered, you know, debt and what's considered equity. I'm just curious whether other people feel the same way, or is it, as we talked about earlier, you know, do this project this way, do this project that way, tweak this here, tweak that there, because that's the way you hold change in abeyance, and you're able to really bang that standard setter over the head and get what you want. Which is the name of the game, at least what I've observed in the last 40 years in the United States. So, as opposed to being strategic, dealing with these issues holistically on a cross-cutting basis, if you really want us to think smarter about this, in my mind, it really militates for that, but you guys tell me.
I would say, yes, you may be out of business,
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go for it.
Knock yourself out.
Okay.
Well, I think if you're looking for, you know, where it could be some slight improvements, I think the question, I don't know, I think either our remuneration committee doesn't listen or they change too often. But expired vested options, why those don't get reversed on the same basis that a discount received from a supplier constitutes a reduction in my cost. I don't think that the employee chooses not to exercise their options or they expire it or they haven't met the exercise price. He's provided services for nothing. I should get to reverse it. Especially when what happens in a remuneration, they then give an gratia cash bonus. So you end up with the income statement hit twice, effectively for the same service. It just doesn't. There's an element of illogicality there because of this perception that it's for future service. We're like yours. They're rewarded for the past. They're just deferred as to when you can exercise. It's like, it's more like, you know, it's not even an incentive really to stay because we've been through, I think we've retrenched because of the falling gold price, nearly 10% of our employees, they all got paid out. So, you know, it's like there's no future service required, but this is theirs.
And secondly, I think that the outcome of the ground data fair value measurement. So because like once you start with that value, that's it. So I guess at least that's the explanation you get in the standard.
Yeah, but I think when it was the standard was implemented, when the standard it came from some perception, you know, like it is for something that's still to happen. They're not retention awards, which I think is the perception in IFRS 2 because of this delayed vesting date. They're not retention awards. It is a secondary award for services rendered already.
They're not getting paid less next year because they have unvested awards yet to vest next year.
Okay. So I think 2 points. First of all, of course, let's go back to when this got introduced and the background at the time. This was perhaps a hotter topic than lease accounting at the time. So I guess we all agree these things are expenses and you succeed in getting booked as expenses. So that was perhaps certain people in the States disagree still. But
no.
I think it's been a success in that. Coming back to perhaps some of the things I said earlier in the strategy debate about thinking about the wider context, I mean, I'm sure many of you, even outside of Switzerland, have been following what's happened there as regards executive compensation, executive compensation disclosures, and that's become a major issue for us. And so, tying exactly in with what Frank said, we have to treat these grants as compensation in 1 year. And I'm sure, I don't know how you handle it from a proxy situation in the US, whether in 1 year or not.
Different tables.
Different tables. To be honest, to explain, I mean, so to explain exactly what the accounting treatment is and how that matches with the grants in the year is mind-blowing, actually. I mean, we spend a lot of time trying to explain to people that we actually have to have a say in a binding vote from the shareholders and say on pay for the executive compensation. And it's been with our complicated plans, it's actually very complex to explain to people what they're actually having a say on. But then you get the added complication that the accounting is nothing like what we're putting in our compensation report. Now, you could argue, well, that's irrelevant. The accounting, if the accounting's right, we keep following the accounting. But I have to say, an added complication. I think it's true with what many people are saying. This stuff is compensation in the year, and it's not retention. Typically, it's not. I mean, it's one element of many other areas of why people stay with the company, but it's not many cases of retention. If people are good leavers, many times actually, we see that in many recent transfers of CEOs, actually people
get
when they transfer to another company, they actually get the same package that they've lost.
But if they do leave the company, sometimes they do lose the entitlement. It happens very often, doesn't it?
Depends on the.
I think it
depends sometimes on the level of the person.
Yes. They don't lose the entitlement. It just gets accelerated.
Certainly, the more senior people, if they're good leavers to entice people away, they have to be made good for what they lose. So, but I think the fundamental point is. Exactly as Frank and other people said, I think it's more and more compensation in the year for the spreading concept.
You'd never think this was a group of bears, would you?
we're in a funny industry. So the awards that were granted 2 years ago, the grant date fair value was 300 and something rand. It was the rand exchange rate then was 40-something dollars. You know, we're now trading at 10. People aren't staying for the share options. just, so I think it's a perception of what people thought they were geared towards. As I said, Frank says, they are compensation for services rendered with a deferred delivery date.
So why don't they rest immediately then? If that's what the substance is, why don't they rest immediately?
No, I think the substance is people are not getting paid less next year because of unvested awards that are vesting next year. People get paid the same amount or if not more, depending on, we all have different models. So.
Would you have a forfeiture assumption in yours?
We work out, you know.
But in your model, with recording it this year, you'd have a forfeiture.
Is vesting also influenced by the accounting? So do you observe, okay, that the vesting conditions are in because the accounting allows them to spread it over several years and not to have it immediately in P&L? Mm. Is that any influence or is that?
No.
And I have to say, my view is I'm not categorically saying you shouldn't spread it, but it's worth looking at.
Yeah, because we have a similar situation in South Africa that Malcolm was talking about. In the year of grant in our compensation table under our stock exchange rules, we have to give the fair value of the grant. And at the point in time that they vest, we then have to give the profit. And to the extent that in this case, the options we've now moved to are zero strikes. So the grant date fair value was at $50, the profit effectively is at 10. So we show a reversal in his earnings. It's like, it's a nightmare.
Mary?
I think it's helpful to hear about the places and you think the answers are, the application of the standard results in counterintuitive information or something that you feel doesn't match with what the intent is. Thinking about intent, I guess I come back to saying Nadia's question about are there any issues not captured here. I don't want to advertise it as a bring out your dead, what's everything that you've ever seen with IFRS, IFRS to assure based payment accounting, but rather thinking of it in the context of the agenda discussion, one of the things we want to have, you learn from doing the first one, is if we get input on share-based payment accounting, we want to make sure that everybody's talking about the same version of share-based payment accounting. So in some ways, a paper, some kind of research paper that says, here's what we understand the issues to be. If we were to address it, it seems you could do A or B, or, and maybe there's a C. But then knowing that, you can get input so that, Bob, you don't say do something thinking of the nuclear response, while Malcolm says do something and it's tidying up one thing. So we get two pieces of input that say do share-based payment, but you have very different visions, in mind. So the purpose of this paper and the question about does it capture all the significant issues around helping people respond, if you were to do something, what do you think should be addressed? And also helps you to think about what kind of priority do you think, should be attached, and is it, yes, these are the anomalies, but when I step back and take the strategic view, there are annoyances, there are noise, it's mind-blowing trying to explain this, but in the overall scheme of things, I'd rather you just let that be because it's more important that we address equity, and, Frank, maybe you cited it as yet another area in which a clearer view of separate financial statements versus consolidated would clear up some of the practice issues, and then just a word of caution, kind of building on what Bob's throwaway remark is. I think if within the context of IFRS 2, a lot of the issues at the end of the day come from having two models, which is basically a negotiated settlement, going back to Malcolm's success story of getting services paid for and shares recognized. I think the most obvious way to address the problem that of all the complexity that comes from having two models is probably to move closer to a single cash settled model than it is to move closer to the grant date. And given, I remember the arguments at the time about how inappropriate vesting date accounting would be. I'm not trying to put people off, but I think if you stand back and look at it, you say complexity of two models is the root cause within IFRS 2 of a lot of the issues. If you're going to eliminate one of the models, which model is more likely to get eliminated? that's just, you know, a caution that I think we probably need to signal somehow. So some views and observations about where we're going.
Well, Mary, the exposure draft that's just gone out and we're commenting on now, just adding more complexity. You know, when, you know, a situation where if you grant the person tax paid mm-hmm. stock options and you settle the tax in cash, that's still treated as a grant date to fair value. It's mm-hmm. like,
but it should.
It's good. Yeah, we've always treated that as the cash settled portion of transactions.
Administratively, just administratively sending the cash out to the IRS.
Yeah.
It's administrative.
And the amendment says, listen, this is an amendment that we were encouraged to propose for, you know, operationality and simplification, the complexity of splitting a single award into two pieces. So.
Except that, you know, I gave the guy either, you have a choice, you can have 100, or you can have 60 tax paid. Well, he chose 60 tax paid because he didn't want the risk of the tax. So that's a risk decision, not a...
Can't expect these poor guys to come up with that amount of cash.
Because he didn't know where he was going to be. If he was based in our foreign operations where the personal tax rate is 22%, he didn't want it tax paid. He was going to be back in South Africa, where it's now 41, he wanted it tax paid, you know.
Okay.
Any more observations on IFRS 2?
So coming back to your question, Mary, I don't know what I suppose to say. I mean, the advantage of the spreading and knowing on the grant day price, you just spread it as you go, less volatility. But I suspect by default, you guys in the ISP would move to the fair value model if you only have one approach. I suspect that's where you end up.
You say fair value, you could call it vesting date, you know, you could cash settle, you know, whatever. But I mean, one thing I picked up from this discussion that I think is not brought out fully in here is that the presumption that if there is vesting, there must be future service. It is something that a number of people are commenting. It is perhaps not valid. It may be more corporate governance or other concerns that.
Well, I'm saying from a corporate governance point of view, often you can't get away with that. You actually have to treat it as compensation when you get to this mismatch.
Yeah. I was thinking more that, you know, Frank's point, it's compensation for past services, not future. Peter challenged then, why do you have a future vesting requirement, future service requirement on it? And I was just saying that future service may be more corporate governance driven than what services. So the additional kind of higher level application concern that I think we need to pick up is this one around how rigid the presumption is of future service equals spreading.
But why wouldn't it be, sorry, I'm just trying to, like if you tell someone you have to stay in employment for 3 years, otherwise you lose entitlement, how is not this a retention mechanism? I'm sorry, maybe I'm missing something obvious here, but if there's a clear condition linked to someone staying in employment for 3 years, just how do you rebut this presumption of not?
Because it's not enforced.
Yes, in
certain circumstances, it's not enforced.
Is that then an accounting issue? Right? If you're saying, okay, it is, these retention features are not enforced, all good leavers, declared as good leavers, why then companies have said? I think then to achieve an accounting that everything is then in that year of granting, you don't have to have this vesting features. And it solves the problem. That is Peter's question, right? There must be any substance, because otherwise, I think, why do companies do this?
Well, it's like in every other assessment of liability. If I was assessing the likelihood of it being used as a retention or is it being used as past compensation, I'd make that assessment at that point in time. Because IFRS 2 tells me that if I have a future vesting, I have to spread.
Yeah.
I'm forced into a position that doesn't reflect the true liability.
But you put a forfeiture on it though, right? Some people are just not going to get it. We have like 20% forfeiture. We have like 10% in over a year.
Yeah.
We have probably about our staff turnover because of the country we're living in, and because even though we're being broadcast, it's a white male still dominated. The guys aren't leaving. There's no opportunities.
So. Now, because if we're saying it's not really a condition for the state, some of our guys get it anyway.
Yeah.
What distinguishes the ones who are going to get it from the ones who do?
All I would say is that, I mean, I think the good grounds for spreading. All I'm trying to say is that in some jurisdictions, mine being one, you actually, from a tax point of view, depending on the instrument you get, you actually get it as, in one go, as taxable income. So the tax authorities have a different view, the corporate governance people have a different view to the accounting view, is all I'm saying. And you might want to say that's totally right, but it does add complexity.
And I wasn't, you know, when I said I think it's an additional point to pick up, I just, it's accurate reporting, sorry, I'm trying to get to accurate reporting of what I heard without necessarily agreeing with it, which is some people have expressed the view that the standard currently is too rigid in terms of forcing spreading, and they believe that in some settings, in some circumstances, the grant is related more to past services than to future services, even though there's a, you know, a vesting. That it's not universal, you know, that wasn't a universal call that it should be required to be expense day one, but it's just saying right now.
I guess the best example, Peter, is that you might have a remuneration model that says if profit is X, then staff are paid X times a percent of that. And that's why, commercially, they would view it as an award for services in that year. What goes on after that is the accountants doing their job.
Because but if you look, for example, at this bonus program at banks currently, I think that is not only that you can say it is for 1 year, because there is really service has to be provided, even if it's good behavior, and they can really lose it and is enforced by regulators now. I think maybe in some companies it is, but in banks especially currently it is different. And therefore maybe it's not one fits all here.
But no, because even in our organization, you might have the perception of vesting. It's actually more a clawback provision rather than a vesting provision. It's so that you can't have that in case we have to claw it back. So it's not a service, it's a corporate governance protection mechanism.
I don't think we should generalize in terms of each company's, whether it's future or current, because I think it would be company specific and industry specific. But maybe the fundamental issue is just coming back to how it's accounted for, which is the fair value that doesn't change, right, or whether it changes. So, and maybe those are just, you know, the symptoms versus the cause. And maybe the debt equity classification issues really do solve for it in the end. I don't know, but certainly I don't think, you know, our comp programs are now actually more explicit around your future potential in the company being linked to your share options. So I don't think we can generalize, but it doesn't change the fact that there's a symptom that people are uncomfortable with, which is around how it's valued, right?
And I think it's just, you know, if you're seeing a lot of volume of interpretive issues coming through, there's at some point you need to step back and say, is this going in the right direction, or do we want to continue to promulgate more interpretations?
So one of your overall suggestions for the agenda consult is to put in a briefing about history, statistics on interpretive issues, and some maybe discussion of those at the beginning of the, you know, I don't know, we'll have sections, but let's say we have a section on where we have research papers, to preface it with X percentage of the interpretive requests who come in this area. They seem to be driven mainly by two causes. And I think some of the questions that have come in for IFRS 2 would really only be addressed by a project on separate financial statements, not IFRS 2, not share-based payments.
And in addition, I think what I heard, especially from Malcolm, is I think this issue regarding executive compensation disclosure, which is in many countries based on what is granted, and then how it links to what is expensed, and that is creating confusion. I think that is also what I'm hearing also from my own countries that it's really a difficult issue. Because then, also as a company, you have to explain, maybe then in a bad year, that you have huge expenses, and that is, I think, causes some confusion and maybe they have to address. It's an additional point to the paper, because I think that is maybe not addressed. How does it fit to executive compensation disclosure?
Because one of the things that happens in exec comp as well is that you get other things affecting it. So they may have other awards going on related to funds that they manage, for example, that trigger an IAS 19 type revaluation approach, which then brings up the whole comp piece. And they're saying, well, equity's part of it, funds under management's part of the index, you could revalue for this, but you're not revaluing for that. And they don't understand what we're trying to do.
Oh.
As in the paper in the paragraph 3, there are some mixed views regarding the priority of this project. And in this paper, you pointed out seven issues. I think the priority of these issues are different. For example, the issue in E. Some people pointed out the complexity of measurement because we need to use the option model. But are there any other solutions to using other solution to use other models? And in addition, I'd like to have comment regarding the convergence with the US GAAP. Probably you will need to make a research on the treatment of the US GAAP. So, US GAAP might have a solution, or maybe maybe the accounting treatment are all the same, or the same, some differences. Probably it will provide a very useful information.
Can I just respond in order of your comments? First point is priority of issues. I didn't try to prioritize them, so I just listed them. I just thought it was a logical order from separate financial statements, from down to measurement, down to disclosures, kind of. So there's no priority whatsoever, just the first issue. The second point you made about point E, about measurement basis and measurement pricing, like, pricing options. Basically, I think potential solution, because people complain about the complexity of discount date fair value measurement, potential solution might be to remove it altogether and ask people to measure share-based payments at current value altogether. That's a potential solution, but that's what all I'm trying to say, that there might be solutions to that. Yeah? So I'm just giving you one, but maybe there are others as well. And finally, moving on to your point about US GAAP, just in general, IFRS 2 is akin in many respects to FAS 1.3 revised. There are some detailed differences, but in terms of current date fair value measurement and current value, fair value measurement for cash settled share-based payment arrangements. So I think IFRS 2 and IFRS FAS 1.3 revised are very similar. And in addition to that, I would like to add that currently FASB has a project on its agenda for share-based payment arrangements. And what they're trying to do, they're looking into potential options in terms of how this complex standard on the US GAAP can be simplified. So they're at early stages of this project at the moment, but this project exists, and they're looking at potential options. But there are lots of similarities between the two standards at the moment. So I hope I answered your questions.
Thank you. Mary?
Just to liven things up, when you know, whenever we put an issue on the agenda like share-based payments and say let's discuss it and talk about the problems, we all can get pretty worked up about what the problems are, where you know, where the anomalies, the disconnects are. But then the big challenge for us in the agenda consultation is, okay, having done that, how do we step back and where does it fit into the bigger picture, both thinking about strategy and also other things that might be competing for just being fixed, you know, if you look at this list of problems. I'd kind of be interested, Martin, if you wouldn't mind, just to ask people here, how many, just step back, would say, at this time, would you say this is a high, medium, or low priority? Just, you know, just a first sense.
That's right, yeah. Who thinks it is high priority that we should address it. Nobody. Then low. Who thinks it is low priority? What?
Medium low.
Medium low, okay. Yeah. I think there's a majority all saying all the executives.
Medium to medium low, yeah. Yeah. That, you know, doesn't mean it's dead, but just it's interesting. Because you know, you can walk away if you just listen to this discussion, you can go, oh my word, we've got to start fixing this right away.
I think you have had a lot of things to fix. Yeah. I mean, people will disagree, but I think they've been pretty pragmatic fixes and perhaps needed fixes. I mean, clarifications that we need. I've not been against it.
Yes, so I just remember all the battle scars.
And probably in a lot of the companies, it's a small number in the total compensation. It's not, you know, 80-90% of the compensation type thing in a lot of the industrial companies. So, you know, for us, it's group-wide compensation.
Just make sure any time you do these quick fixes, it's always prospective.
We've heard that.
Put it into the improvement.
Okay, so thank you for this discussion.